The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 14, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Case of the Murder in Wax. Episode 2, Murder Beyond the Mountains. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. Tonight, instead of joining the doctor at his home, we're all meeting here at Camp Roberts in California, where the doctor's going to tell his story before a large audience of GIs. And, as usual, I'm going to tell my story right now. It's about Petri California Sherry. And now let's join Dr. Watson and get on with our story.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell.
Well, Doctor, your study seems a little bigger than usual this week.
Yes, my boy. I felt that as tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure was rather an exciting one, the men here at Camp Roberts might like me to tell it to them in person.
I'm sure they will, Doctor. Which particular story have you selected?
One that I call The Strange Case of the Murder in Wax. It concerns one of the most sinister mass murderers who ever threatened the peace of London. It's in the summer of 1900, and the city had been rocked by a series of ghastly murders on Hampstead Heath.
Hampstead Heath?
Yes, Hampstead Heath. That's a large, rambling park in the suburbs of London, Mr. Bartell, and noted as a rendezvous for young lovers. It was here that the elusive murderer, knife in hand, was wont to roam at nighttime, searching for his prey. All of his victims were young girls, and despite the frantic efforts of the police, each murder seemed to be as baffling as the one that preceded. Finally, of course, as usual, Scotland Yard came to Sherlock Holmes for help. It seems almost like yesterday, Mr. Bartell, that Inspector Lestrade stood in our Baker Street rooms, imploring Holmes to handle the case.
Mr. Holmes, you've got to help us. I don't mind telling you the Yard's at the end of its rope.
I sympathize with you, Lestrade, but I don't see that there's much that I can do. Only the police can handle the widespread, detailed work necessary to this case. The private detective is helpless.
Yes, perhaps if you'd come to Mr. Holmes in the first place, Lestrade, he might have helped you.
But the murderer hasn't finished yet. There'll be more killings if we don't catch him, you mark my words. Mr. Holmes, please help us, won't you?
Before I commit myself, Lestrade, give me the exact chronology of events, will you? All my information on the murders has been derived from the London newspapers, notoriously inaccurate in matters of fact.
I can give you all the particulars, sir. I've been on the case right from the beginning. All the murders have taken place on Hampstead Heath at night time, and all the victims have been young women.
Who was the first one?
A girl by the name of Oakley, a Bessie Oakley. She was a shop girl who worked at Derry and Tom's in Kensington High Street. 3 weeks ago, she was out on the Heath with a young fella by the name of Alfred Smith. From what he told me, it was a moonlight night that night as they sat there out on the Heath.
Come on, Bessie, give us a kiss.
Oh, go on, Fred. Don't be so sloppy.
I ain't sloppy. Come on, Bess.
Hello, hello. Who's this coming towards us?
Bloomin' Prowler. Here, you, what you want?
Can't you say something?
Look out, Bessie's got a knife.
No, you don't. You devil, you hit my Fred. Keep away from me. Keep away from me, you.
And that's all I know, Inspector Lestrade. I never got a good look at him. He caught me on the head, and when I come to, there was poor Bessie with a throat cut.
Yeah, that's your story, young fella, my lad. All right, Sergeant. You can book him on suspicion of murder.
Sir George, we shouldn't be walking on the Heath. Didn't you read about the murder here 2 days ago?
It's a fine thing. I take you out in the moonlight, and you talk of murders. Let's talk about us, Violet, darling.
It seems to me we should talk about your wife.
My wife doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Violet, if I could get a divorce,
Shh. There's someone behind that tree. He's coming towards us.
Who are you, sir? And what do you... No, you don't! I... No!
Don't come near me! Don't!
Inspector Lestrade, she's dead, poor girl, I know, but... A scandal can't bring her back. If there's any way to keep my name out of the papers,
I... Yeah, I'm afraid you'll have to take your chances, Sir George. Oh, and Sergeant...
Yes, Inspector?
You can turn that boy loose, Weevil, for questioning. The man who did this is obviously the same killer. I'm afraid we're going to hear a lot more from him.
Light edition, evening paper. Hempstead Heath murderer strikes for fifth time. Nine girls murdered on Hempstead Heath. Light edition, evening paper
here. Now, look here, miss. You can't go walking by yourself on the Heath. It ain't safe.
Thank you, Constable, but I'm not frightened. I want to be by myself. I want to think.
Well, I can't stop you by law, I suppose, but you shouldn't do it. Yeah. I don't know how to handle these modern young things, and that's a fact.
Inspector Lestrade, he must have killed her the moment she got out of my sight. I searched the old ruddy Heath, but I couldn't find the murderer. But it did startle him. He left his knife in the body.
Good, Jackson. The body's not been identified yet, eh?
No, Inspector.
We'll print her photograph in all the papers. We've got to find out who she is. Mr. Bishop, is this the body of your missing daughter?
Yes, it's Rosie, my Rose. Inspector Lestrade, if I ever lay my hands on that murdering fiend, I'll kill him. I'll kill him with my bare hand.
Here's the story, Mr. Holmes. Rose Bishop was the 10th and last girl murdered.
But she was the first girl murdered when she was alone, eh, Lestrade?
Yes, sir.
You found no clues?
Well, none that proved anything when we checked on them.
Let me ask you a question or two, Lestrade.
Well, anything you like, sir.
You've taken the obvious precautions, of course.
How do you mean,
sir? You posted a heavy police guard on the Heath?
Well, yes, sir. We've had 100 plainclothesmen walking there at night ever since the second murder. But he seems to slip through our fingers.
I suppose you've also posted policemen dressed in women's clothes.
Yes, Miss Holmes. And we've hired girls to walk the Heath in couples with our plainclothesmen. But the murderer won't seem to rise to our bait.
Well, he's a cunning brute.
Yes, he is, Watson. Obviously a morbid madman obsessed by a hatred of love. He'll be hard to catch. Lestrade, you mentioned clues that amounted to nothing when you checked them. What were these clues?
Well, footprints, a couple of cigarette butts dropped at the scene of the crime. Nothing that helped us. The only important clue was the knife we found in the body of Rose Bishop, the last girl murdered.
Of course, the experts at the yard examined it.
Yes, sir. Didn't tell us a thing, though.
You got the knife with you?
Here it is, Mr. Holmes. I knew you wouldn't trust us. You'd want to look at it yourself.
Thank you, Lestrade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
What is it, Holmes?
This knife is a collector's item. It's at least 100 years old, I should say. May I keep this overnight, Lestrade? I should like to conduct a few experiments of my own.
Why, of course you can, sir.
Then you're going to take on the case, Holmes?
Now let us say that I'll take it under advisement. I'll do my best, Lestrade. I'll do my best.
Well, thank you, sir.
If any further developments occur, communicate with me at once, will you?
Yes, sir.
In the meanwhile, I'll smoke a few pipes on the problem. But I promise nothing, my dear fellow. I promise absolutely nothing.
O'clock in the morning, Holmes. You're still peering through your microscope at that knife Lestrade left with you.
That's true, old chap. That's quite true. I must be a very dull companion. Why don't you go to bed?
Oh, because I'm afraid I may miss something, confound it. Have you discovered anything?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, what?
The handle of this knife is corrugated. On the underside, I observed a slight diffusion in the markings. Under the penetrating eye of the microscope, I found a minute deposit which had caused the diffusion. I have just analyzed that deposit. It's wax, colored wax.
Colored wax? Well, what does that signify?
Oh, by itself, very little. But when you combine it with a knife that definitely belongs to another century, it does suggest a certain origin.
I've got an idea. Perhaps it came from the theater. An 18th century dagger could belong in a period play. And the colored wax might easily be part of an actor's makeup.
Excellent deduction, Watson.
Oh, thanks, Sherlock.
However, my own theory would be that this dagger came from a waxworks exhibition.
Oh, wrong again.
Putty is used in theatrical disguises, but I don't recall the use of colored wax.
Whereas it is used in making waxen effigies, and of course the dagger would belong as part of the costume.
Precisely, my dear fellow. It's a long chance, but I think in the morning we'll make a tour of the various London waxworks exhibitions. If my deduction is a false one, at least we'll have the pleasure of a busman's holiday. We can visit all our old friends who died on the gallows. Any tired, old chap?
I must say I'm a little weary. This is the fourth waxworks exhibition that we've been to.
The fourth and the last. We failed to find any clues here at the Vex Museum. We can return to Baker Street.
Well, thank heaven, this is our last port of call. I'm so dizzy from looking at waxworks that they begin to look like human beings to me. Did you notice that I asked directions from the wax policeman at the entrance door just
now? Yes. Well, I'm sure many people have been deceived in the same way. Uh-huh. Here we are.
Oh, Monsieur Levesque doesn't believe in understatement, does he? Look at that sign there.
Oh, gracious me. The Chamber of Horrors. Come in and see the pageant of murder. All the great killers of history reenacting their famous crimes. Well, let's go in, Watson. We should feel thoroughly at home.
Creepy in here, isn't it? I've heard that Monsieur Levesque will pay £100 to anyone who will spend all night alone in the Chamber of Horrors.
Yes, I've heard of that challenge, too. Are you thinking of accepting the bet?
Great Scott, now I wouldn't spend a night here for £1,000.
A very comprehensive collection of killers, aren't they? Let's see, Williams, Wainwright, the Marchioness de Brinvilliers.
By Jove, yes. She was an attractive woman, wasn't she? As trim a pair of ankles as ever I've seen.
Yes, but you wouldn't have liked her cooking, Watson. She used the most lethal condiments of almost any woman in history. Hello.
What is it?
Look over there.
I was wondering when we'd come to one of your cases. Dr. Grimsby Rylett and the murder at Stoke Moran. Or the case of the speckled band. By Jove, Holmes, the tableau's extraordinarily realistic, isn't it?
Yes. One of another old friends of mine are represented here. I should rather like to renew acquaintance with Ricoletti of the Clubfoot and his abominable wife.
Ricoletti? I don't remember him, Holmes.
Oh, one of my earlier cases, old fellow. I must tell you that story sometime.
I wish you would, Arbuff. Holmes, look, that veiled figure over there. Read the placard in front of it.
The Hampstead Heath Murderer. Well, how very interesting.
The face is covered with a black veil.
Is this pure showmanship, I wonder, or does Monsieur Levesque know more than Scotland Yard and I?
Good day to you, gentlemen.
Great Scott, you startle me, sir.
Are you admiring my collection of murderers?
Monsieur Levesque?
Yes, sir. And haven't I the distinction of addressing Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
That is my name, and this is my friend Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How do you do, Doctor? I am greatly honored to meet you both. What do you think of my Chamber of Horrors?
Oh, it's very impressive. We're particularly interested in this veiled figure of the Hampstead Heath murderer.
Yes, indeed we are, sir. Is there a face beneath that veil?
I'll let you in on a trade secret, gentlemen. There are no recognizable features behind that veil. This is purely for publicity purposes. The public always expects to see the latest horrors here. And I thought I'd titillate their morbid palates by having a mysterious figure representing the killer. Of course, if he is captured, I shall add his effigy to my collection.
You think he will be captured, then?
One can only speculate. He's a clever man, Mr. Holmes.
And by the way, Monsieur Levesque, does your offer of £100 to anyone who will spend a night in the Chamber of Horrors still hold good?
Oh, yes. Are you thinking of accepting the bet, Mr. Holmes?
No, but Dr. Watson would like to.
I don't recommend the experience, Doctor. It's an ordeal that calls for nerves of steel. However, I shall be glad to arrange for
it. I haven't the slightest intention
of backing down now? Of course you haven't, old fellow. What time shall my friend return, sir?
About 11:30 tonight. I'll be waiting for him at the main entrance.
Splendid. Come on, Watson.
Oh, Holmes, I told you.
Good day, Monsieur Levesque.
Good day, gentlemen. I shall be waiting for you tonight, Doctor.
Holmes, what the blazes do you think you're doing? I haven't the slightest intention of keeping that appointment tonight.
Well, of course you haven't. I shall keep it. Disguised as you.
You keep it? For heaven's sake, tell me what you're up to, Holmes. You didn't even mention that missing dagger to Levesque.
No, because he knows something about the murderer. I'm convinced of it.
Well, why'd you say that?
As we were standing there talking to him, a breath of air from the open window blew back a corner of the veil. I'll swear that there are clearly defined features beneath it.
And so you're going back there tonight to find out?
That's right, old fellow. The superstitious used to believe they could use a waxen image to kill a man. Tonight, Watson, we shall prove that a waxen image can be used to trap a killer.
Well, Doctor, so Sherlock Holmes decided to disguise himself as you and spend the night in the Chamber of Horrors,
yes,
huh?
Yes, that's right, Mr. Bartell. After dinner that night, he began to apply the makeup. It's uncanny to sit there in Baker Street and watch Holmes slowly turning into a very convincing replica of myself. As he did so, we discussed last-minute arrangements.
I'm promptly at 11:30, Watson. If I'm not back here by 2 o'clock, you'd better come out to
me. Well, Mr. Demi, come and wait outside, old fellow, just in case there's any trouble.
No. You'd attract attention. By the way, do you recall the name of the last girl murdered on the heath?
Yes, Bishop. Rose Bishop, wasn't
it? Exactly. The only girl who was murdered when she was unescorted. The body was identified by her father.
What of it, Holmes?
Levesque is a French name, and yet the gentleman had a decidedly English accent. I should say that he adopted a foreign name as being more suited to his profession.
I don't see what you're driving at. What's the connection between Levesque, the owner of the waxworks, and the father of Rose Bishop, the murdered girl?
Levesque is the French word for bishop.
Great Scott. You think that he knows who the murderer is and...
I know only one thing, Watson. I see what is beneath that black veil.
Yeah. Now, how's my disguise?
Wonderful. You look exactly like me, but how'll you manage about the voice?
Well, I don't think it'll be too difficult, old man. After all, Levesque knows me very well.
Oh, I can't understand half what you're saying.
In your own case, old chap, that's a handicap that I've suffered from for years.
Rubbish. I'm perfectly intelligent.
Now, let me see. The bullseye lantern, yes. Watson, I think I'll borrow your revolver, too. I probably won't need it, but for once, I think it might be safer for me to go armed.
Here you are, Holmes. Now, do be careful.
I will, old chap. Don't worry. Goodbye. And if I'm not back by 2 o'clock, you better come to the waxworks and see what's happened to me.
Dr. Watson, you don't mind if I search you?
Oh, gracious, Levesque, of course not.
No lantern, please. The moonlight will give you all the illumination that you need. Oh, dear me, a revolver in your pocket. I'm afraid I can't allow that.
Oh, no.
Once before, a young man who unwisely accepted my bet left bullet holes in some of my finest waxworks before he finally went raving mad.
Gracious me, raving mad, did he? Wish Holmes were here.
Don't be frightened, Dr. Watson. Many of the waxwork murderers here are all friends of yours. They'll be good company. I shall come and release you at 8 in the morning.
Yes, but no.
I've sealed all the windows with string and wax. I shall seal the door behind me as I leave.
Well, that's very unkind of you.
Midnight. Yeah. The bet is on, Doctor. You still wish to go through with it?
Well, I suppose so.
Very well, then. I shall leave you now. Yeah. Good night, Dr. Watson.
Good night.
Pleasant dreams.
Pleasant dreams. Who's home to be here with me?
Shut the window. Quick, Scott, it's Watson. Now before his time. Well, here got the seals and the string. Come on, up with it.
Holmes, are you all right?
Shh. I'm all right. You came early. But it's just as well. You're carrying a lantern. Levesque took mine with him. Come on in. What made you decide to come here so early?
After you left the Strad came to Baker Street. He told me there was another murder on the heath at 7 o'clock tonight.
Another murder, eh?
I started worrying about you, Holmes. I had a premonition of impending danger, and I decided to come over here. You're not angry with me?
Of course not, my dear fellow. I'm glad of your company, and I appreciate your concern.
Have you looked under the veil of the waxwork figure of the Hampstead Heath murderer yet?
No, I was just about to. Your lantern will be most useful. Come on, Watson.
Well, what have you been doing? Just doing nothing?
Yes. I wanted to give Levesque an impression that I was here for the night, and I also wanted to do some serious thinking. I smoked two pipes on the problem, Watson, and I think I know the answer now.
I'm willing to swear you'll know the face you see when I lift the veil from the waxen dummy.
Here's the figure.
Now, put your lantern a little higher, will you? That's it. I lift the veil and...
Who do we see?
Good Lord, it's the waxwork figure of Levesque himself.
Precisely, Watson. An unparalleled example of the self-betrayal inherent in criminal egotism. Levesque couldn't resist the...
Holmes, the waxwork is moving. It's got it. It's alive.
Yes, gentlemen. Which is more than either of you will be in a few minutes.
You've re-entered this room by a secret door, I suppose.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. And since you've displayed such a flattering interest in the Hampstead Heath murderer, I decided to remove the wax figure and appear in person.
Look out, Holmes. You've got a revolver.
Oh, no, Doctor. This isn't a revolver in my pocket. What would the Hampstead Heath murderer want with a revolver? This is a knife. I feel so much more at home with a knife.
There are two of us, Vic. Remember that.
And both unarmed. Which one of you meddlers wants to die first?
Look out, Holmes.
Watch it. Both together.
The lantern smashed.
Yes, and the moon's fading. What a pity.
Holmes, where are you?
Over here by the effigy of Macbeth. How very thoughtful of you to provide him with a dagger, Levesque.
A wooden one, my dear Holmes. You can't escape me. I can feel my way in the dark here. I know every inch of this room. You're doomed, both of you.
Don't strike a match, Holmes. You'll make a target of yourself.
Devil with that. I'm lighting this newspaper. It'll make an excellent torch to set light to the nearest waxwork.
No, don't burn my waxwork!
Not. Wax on a wooden frame should blaze brilliantly. There we are.
Oh, you devil! You're destroying my life's work!
Holmes, that burning wax is pouring all over the floor. The curtains are catching light. The whole place will burn down.
Oh, my beautiful museum!
I thought this would smoke you out. Quick, Watson, at him again.
What's that knife, Holmes?
Well, Mr. Holmes, you've done it again. You've solved the case in a blaze of glory.
Get the point, sir.
A blaze of glory.
Yes, Lestrade, I get the point. Thank you very much. Pass that marmalade, will you, Watson?
Holmes, is that the morning paper you brought with you, Lestrade?
Yes, Doctor. Want me to read you the headlines?
Yes, please do.
Hampstead Heath murderer captured in fire that destroys waxwork exhibition. You know, Mr. Holmes, you and the doctor were lucky you weren't burned to death. Never mind the chance you ran of having your throat cut by that maniac.
It was fortunate that the police and firemen were on the scene as quickly as they were. Levesque had the strength of 10 men.
Yes, the strength of a madman. He'll never stand trial, of course.
No, Doctor. He'll end up in an asylum where he belongs. Mr. Holmes, what made you suspect Levesque?
You first gave me the clue yourself, Lestrade. You told me that all the murdered girls were accompanied by men when they were attacked. All of them save one, Rose Bishop. Therefore, if the murderer was venting a hatred of love, he had to be someone very close to Rose Bishop to know that she was a suitable victim. That point alone, which I was shockingly slow in observing, should have told us to focus our attention on the father, Mr. Bishop, alias Levesque.
Well, your theory was certainly right, Mr. Holmes. You should have heard his raving after the arrest. He swore his daughter had been ruined, and so he'd killed her, too.
Holmes, the waxwork figure of the killer, the one with the veil, a rich face, the features underneath were those of Levesque himself, weren't they?
I'm certain of it, old fellow. You see, he had two great prides. The first, his natural pride as a fine craftsman in wax. The second, his perverted pride as a prominent and successful murderer. These two prides combined suggested to his crazed mind he make a waxwork figure of himself and range it with the other great killers of history.
Yes, but he was cunning enough to protect himself by placing a veil over the
Precisely,
face.
Precisely, my dear fellow. And when he saw us yesterday and we accepted the wager, he undoubtedly became suspicious and removed the wax figure last night and made his personal appearance as the murderer with every intention of killing us both. Yes, we were very lucky, old chap.
Yeah, if you ask me, Mr. Holmes, you've been very smart.
No, I quite agree, Lestrade. I think you solved the case brilliantly, Holmes.
No. I've been very sluggish. I solved by circumstance and melodrama what should have been a purely intellectual problem. I'm not pleased with myself. Lestrade, I hope that my name has not been used in that newspaper report.
No, it hasn't, sir.
Excellent. I want no credit in this case.
Well, do you mean to say that you're going to let Scotland Yard get the praise for catching him, Holmes?
Why not?
Well, that's very generous of you, Mr. Holmes. It'll make things a lot easier for me.
Yes, it certainly will. Holmes, I can't see why you reproach yourself.
Because, my dear Watson, like the Hampstead Heath murderer, I too have my pride as a craftsman. This case had a clearly defined pattern, and I was unable to recognize it. If you should have occasion to chronicle this story, Watson, and I should prefer that you didn't, I would like you to entitle it The Education of an Idiot.
Oh, come now, Holmes, The Education of an Idiot? That's absurd.
I know. But if you do tell this story, it'll probably end up as The Strange Case of the Murderer in Wax.
Well, Doctor, that was sure a swell story. You know, that's the kind of story I like. Lots of action.
Well, that's the kind of story I like to tell. You know, Mr. Bartell, although our broadcasts were heard overseas every week through Armed Forces Radio, this is one of the few occasions that I've had the privilege of really telling my story directly to the boys. And it's been a great pleasure for me to be here at Camp Robert.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Adventure of the Second Stain. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting story about his good friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now I'm sure our old friend Dr. Watson's ready for us, so let's go in and join him.
Come in, come in, come in. Good evening, Mr. Bartell.
Good evening, Doctor. Well, the puppies seem very happy tonight.
Yeah, tonight, yes, but you should have seen them this afternoon. I doubt if there were two more frightened little dogs in the whole of California. Well, not you control yourself.
What happened, Doctor?
Well, I took them for a walk on the beach. As we were scrambling round a rocky point, a seal popped his head up in the water quite close to us.
What'd the puppies do?
Oh, both of them barked at it furiously.
And the seal?
Blew a few bubbles and then barked right back. I don't know what the world's speed record is for short-legged dogs, but I'm sure they've broken.
You know, Doctor, I'll have to join you on one of those afternoon strolls of yours. You always seem to be having such exciting adventures. Oh, and talking of that, how's about tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Well, I'm all ready for you, my boy. In fact, I was looking over my notes on the case just before you arrived. This is another story in which Sherlock Holmes' elder brother, Mycroft, played an important part. Mycroft Holmes was 7 years older than Sherlock, and some said it is superior in powers of observation and deduction.
That sounds like heresy, Doctor.
No, young fellow, my lad. Holmes himself was the first to admit it. In fact, if it hadn't been for his incurable laziness, Mycroft would have been a formidable rival to his younger brother. However, Mycroft did hold a position of considerable importance at the Foreign Office, and it was there that tonight's story begins. It was in the winter of 1899. And Mycroft Holmes, after a gourmet's lunch, was reclining full length on a leather settee. His eyes were closed, his hands were folded across his stomach, and his breath came rhythmically. A cynic would have declared that Mycroft Holmes was taking an after-luncheon snooze. But Mr. Holmes' secretary, a gentleman by the name of Gardner, was a realist. He tapped on the door discreetly. Then he rapped on it. And still there was no response, so he opened the door and entered. After a moment, he gave what he thought was a discreet cough. Mycroft Holmes opened his eyes and folded his hands and said,
"Found it, Gardner. Must you come in here and bark at me so soon after lunch?"
I'm sorry, Mr. Holmes,
But I thought...
You thought that as I was lying down with my eyes closed that I must be bored, and so you came galloping in. Oh! Well, what do you want?
There's an old lady outside, sir. She insists on seeing you personally. I've tried to get rid of her, but...
What's her name?
Mrs. Hudson, sir.
Mrs. Hudson? Show her in, Gardner. Show her in.
Very good, sir.
Undoubtedly a message from young Sherlock. How are you, Mrs. Hudson?
Oh, good day, Mr. Holmes. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I won't take up much of your time.
Sit down, won't you? Don't leave us, Gardner. I may need you in a few minutes.
Very good, sir.
Now, Mrs. Hudson, what's the message?
Message, sir?
Didn't my brother send you with some message that he was afraid to entrust to the ordinary channels? He's always so confounded and dramatic.
Oh, bless your heart. No, sir. I've come to you with a little problem of my own. I didn't like to bother Mr. Sherlock Holmes with it. He's been so busy lately, and he's looking very tired.
And so you came to me. Oh, delightful.
I thought you wouldn't mind, sir. You've always been so nice and friendly to me.
Pure laziness. It is less effort to keep an old friend than to make a new enemy. But tell me your problem.
Well, it's really my sister's problem, sir. She keeps a boarding house at 14 Kensington Garden Square in Bayswater. And she's convinced one of her boarders, a man who has a room on the first floor back, she's convinced that he's a birdman.
And what in heaven's name is a birdman? Do you know Gardner?
No, sir. I can't imagine.
Oh, it's like a werewolf, gentlemen, except that the man turns into a bird.
Oh, come now, Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, I know it sounds daft, but my sister's in a dreadful state. Of course, I've been with your brother long enough, sir, to know that such things are nonsense. But how can I prove it to her?
What reason does your sister give for holding a strange belief?
She keeps finding pigeon feathers in the room. Now, the man doesn't keep pigeons, sir. My sister knows that for a fact.
Has she found any traces of scattered food on the window ledge?
None, sir. No signs of any pigeons, except the feathers. My sister's a wee bit fey, Mr. Holmes. She's the seventh daughter of a seventh daughter, and you know what that means. Just the same, she's not imagining things, sir. She's shown me the feathers herself.
Where were they, Mrs. Hudson?
Somewhere on the floor by the end of the bedstead, sir. I brought some along with me. Here, sir. And we found some more in the gentleman's cupboard where he keeps his clothes.
By George, I wonder
what if... What is it, sir?
I'll tell you in a moment, Gardner. Mrs. Hudson, this matter will require a little private investigation. You may return to your sister and tell her not to worry. I shall get in touch with you as soon as my inquiries are completed. Good day to you.
Good day, sir. And I'm very much obliged to you.
Well, Gardner, what do you make of it?
An old wives' tale, sir. You're not treating it seriously, are you?
Yes, I am. One of these feathers shows evidence of having had string tightened round it. That suggests a captive bird. Now, a captive bird smuggled into an obscure boarding house would point to something of the greatest importance to us, Gardner.
By George, sir. You mean carrier pigeons?
Exactly. And remember that we're at war and that the Boers have obtained several important and highly confidential secrets of ours lately. We know there's a leak somewhere. This requires an active investigator who can work with discretion. Now, I could work with discretion, but I don't feel too active at the moment. Ah, I have it. I want you to write this letter to my brother. Disguise your hand, use plain, cheap notepaper, and don't sign the letter. He won't be able to resist that combination. Are you ready, Gardner?
Yes, sir.
Very well, then. My dear Mr. Sherlock Holmes, we know of your proposed investigation of the tenant in the first floor back at 14 Kensington Garden Square. We warn you, as you value your life, keep away from the...
We warn you, as you value your life, to keep away from the case. And that, my dear Watson, is why we are driving towards 14 Kensington Garden Square, disguised as building inspectors of the London County Council.
Well, I must say, it's a very challenging letter, Holmes. Unsigned,
yes.
I notice.
Written on cheap notepaper and in a disguised hand. No clue there, I'm afraid.
Well, we're entering the square, Holmes.
Let's stop the cab here. You can drop us here, cabbie.
I'll walk you out, Captain.
It would seem a little incongruous in these costumes for us to arrive in a cab.
Yes, I suppose so.
Here you are, cabby.
Oh, thank you, Governor.
Supposing this mysterious tenant of the first floor back should be in his room when we get there.
We must hope our disguises are convincing and keep our wits about us.
This may be a trap.
Yes, just what I was going to say. After all, you've never heard of 14 Kensington Gardens until you received an unsigned letter 2 hours ago warning you to keep away from it. I don't like the look of it.
There we are, number 14. I suggest that you let me do most of the talking.
Good Lord, yes. My Cockney accent doesn't compare with yours.
Who do you want to see?
We're from the London County Council. We are. We've had complaints about a leaky gas jet in the first floor back.
Oh, that's Mr. Green's room. He ain't home.
Well, that don't matter, my dear. We'll go up and take a look. Come on, Bertie.
Right. You are, Alfie.
Want me to show you the way? The missus is out, shall
we? No, thanks, dearie. Me and Bertie can't get lost, can we, Bertie?
No, of course we can't. Of course we can't. Oh, look at him laughing.
Come on, Bertie. Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside. Oh, I do like to be beside the sea. Dilly-um-pa-pum-pa-pum, dilly-um-pa-pum-pa-pum. Nice house, Bertie, ain't it?
Yes, Elf. Nice house can be, this house.
Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside. I do like to be beside the... Here we are. First floor back. Better make sure the bloke ain't home. Oh, I do lock the door.
No, no, he ain't home, Alfie.
Huh? No, well, all right, let's go in.
Oh. So this is the mysterious room, eh?
Well, it looks perfectly ordinary, doesn't it?
Yes, a pressing example of the squalor of boarding house life. Hello. What's this on the bedspread?
Feathers. Must have come out of the pillow.
No. These are pigeon feathers, old chap. And look here, Watson. Attached to the bed rail.
No, that's only a piece of string.
String, yes, but with a small metal ring on the end. A ring such as is used to place around a homing pigeon's leg.
But why should someone keep carrier pigeons in an obscure boarding house like
yes,
this?
Why indeed? Why indeed? The answer could be that the tenant of this room is engaged in some sinister activity that requires the use of carrier pigeons in sending messages.
Yes, there's no evidence of the birds being kept here.
That's true, Othello, that's true. Possibly the owner of this room is given a pigeon by one of his superiors, brings it here, affixes his message, and releases the bird.
But why couldn't he just take the message to where they keep the birds?
Well, in that way, he would run the risk of being picked up with dangerous and incriminating messages on him.
What kind of skullduggery involves the use of carrier pigeons, you suppose?
We're at war with the Boers in South Africa, Watson. What could be more logical than that a spy in their pay should be using this method to smuggle important information out of the country?
By Jove, yes, Holmes, I wouldn't mind being...
Shh! Somebody coming. Look out.
Who are you? What the devil do you think you're doing in my room?
Well, my name's Bertram, and I come here to look at your gas pipes.
No, don't lie to me. Who are you?
It's like I say, Captain. My name's Bertram, and I come from the London County Council.
Very well, then. If you won't tell me the truth, perhaps this revolver will make you change your mind.
Look here, Captain. Look here, Captain.
Grab his revolver, Watson.
Yes, right. Holmes, where were you?
I slipped behind the doors. This gentleman opened it.
Yeah,
me, sir. Your overcoat seems extraordinarily well filled with chest, doesn't it? Why not slip it off?
Yeah.
It's a bit warm in here.
Let me alone.
So, you were right, Holmes. He had a pigeon under his coat.
Yes. See if you can catch the bird, will you, old chap?
All right, here. Come on, Pidgey. Pidgey, come on. Come on, little fella. Come along, Pidgey. There he comes. That's it. Look at the little fella. Snuggled up on my arm. Friendly little fella, isn't he?
Yes, I... Look out, Watson. The gentleman's revolver.
Yes,
he's going after
and
it.
When I get it, I'll...
Oh. A beautiful uppercut, Holmes.
I'm afraid he'll be unable to talk to us for some time. How fortunate he told us where the message was hidden before we indulged in this little set,
too. What do you mean? Did you say anything about a message?
No, not verbally. But I was watching his reflection in the mirror as he entered the room. His eyes first glanced at this top drawer on the dresser here to see if we'd touched it. It was obviously the most important spot in the room. Let's see. Ah, here we are. A message already rolled up and in its container.
Oh? What does it say, Holmes?
It's in code, which is not surprising, but I don't think it will be very difficult to decipher.
Yes, and when you've done that?
Then, my dear fellow, I shall compose a code message of my own and persuade this pigeon to lead us to its master. Expression, Watson, that you're wondering why I brought you to Dexter's Music Hall in the Edgware Road.
Well, I must confess I was confused, Holmes. First of all, we go to Baker Street and you spend hours poring over some obscure book, and you write out a message, attach it to a pigeon and let it loose.
now you bring me here. I hate to question you when you're working, but I should be glad if you'd give me some idea of what's going on.
Of course, good old chap. At times I must seem confoundedly mysterious, I'm sure. Here's the situation. The obscure book I was studying was the Table of Ciphers. I was trying to decode the message we found in the room on the first floor
back.
Well,
obviously you succeeded, or we wouldn't be here.
Yes, the key word was Louis Botha, the name of the Boer leader. The message was a report on the number of troops now in training at Aldershot.
Then you were right. We're mixed up with a ring of enemy agents.
Obviously, old chap. So I kept the original message and composed another using the same code and dispatched it by carrier pigeon.
Well, what did you say in your message?
Meet me at tonight, 8 o'clock, table number 3 at Dexter's Music Hall.
What made you choose this place as a rendezvous?
Well, I happen to know that it's a common meeting place for world characters.
And which is table number 3?
The one over there in the corner. I reserved it.
Then why don't we go and sit down there instead of standing at here back?
I thought we'd give our visitor the opportunity of showing his hand first. He won't be expecting Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, I fancy.
Good Lord, look at this woman coming on to sing. Do you ever see so many fellas?
Not allowed to ever bow, except upon the sky. So yesterday he came and took him walking through the
sky. Holmes, look, look. A man just sitting down at table number 3.
What's with it? Look. It's Sid Trimble.
Sid Trimble, who's he?
A dangerous criminal who once worked for the Moriarty gang. We've caught a prize pigeon, Watson. You'd better have your revolver handy, old chap. Undoubtedly, he'll recognize us.
Right, you are, Holmes.
Come on, then. I'm so glad you're able to keep your appointment, sir.
Sherlock Holmes, this is a trap.
Don't try any tricks. I've got a revolver here, Sid.
How'd you like this table in your face?
Watson, you didn't shoot him, did you?
No, no, he knocked my hand. The revolver went off. The shot went wild, I swear it did.
Yes, of course. Look at the wound. There are no powder burns. The shot was fired from some distance.
Holmes, he's dead.
Out of the way. Out of the way, please. Now then, what's going on here?
Constable, this man has been killed.
Yes, and it's easy to see who did it.
Well, I didn't do it, Constable, if that's what you're thinking.
No? Then why are you standing here with a smoking revolver in your hand? Come on, you're under arrest.
But you can't arrest me. I'm Dr. Watson, and this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
I don't care if you're the King of Siam and the Bishop of London himself. You're under arrest, and I'm taking you both to Scotland Yard.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Dr. Watson, that was really one for the books. So you got yourself arrested on a murder charge.
Yes, Mr. Bartell. It's a very humiliating experience. I was taken off to Scotland Yard in the Black Maria. Just like any common criminal. The wretched constable wouldn't listen to a word that I'd got to say.
Well, Sherlock Holmes went with you, of course.
Naturally, but we arrived at Scotland Yard. My mortification was complete, and I found that I was led into the presence of our old friend, Inspector Lestrade. Holmes spoke to him at some length, but I could see from Lestrade's expression that my position was a very serious one.
I can see what it is, Mr. Holmes. You see, I know you both, but I must say there are lots of them here at the Yard as don't like what they call your eye-handed method.
But, Lestrade, personal likes or dislikes have nothing to do with this.
Well, of course they haven't. It's purely a matter of evidence.
Well, I know that, Dr. Watson. And the constable's evidence was as clear as the nose on your face. The dead man was shot through the head, and you were standing in front of the body with a drawn revolver
in your
hand. But,
my dear Lestrade, there were no powder burns on the wound.
Yeah, that's what you tells me, Mr. Holmes. But I'll have to wait for the official report on that. The police surgeon's examining the body now. You understand, gentlemen, I'm not saying I'm sorry that Sid Trimble's dead. He's been a thorn in our side for a good many years. In fact, here's the police surgeon now. Dr. Hendricks, this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do? How do you do, gentlemen? I'm a great admirer of you both, and
I'm sorry to see you in such a very unfortunate plight.
Thank you, Doctor.
What were your findings, Dr. Hendricks?
Well, I just extracted the bullet, Lestrade, and I'm very much afraid it's the same make and caliber as the one missing from Dr. Watson's revolver.
Yes, but that doesn't prove that I fired the fatal shot. A .45 Colt's a very common weapon, Doctor.
It proves nothing. Dr. Hendricks, as I was just saying to Inspector Lestrade before you came in, the only fact that show my friend guilty would be powder burns on the wound, thereby giving... proving the bullet had been fired from close range.
I entirely agree with you, Mr. Holmes.
As there were no powder burns
on
the...
Oh, but there are powder burns, Mr. Holmes.
What?
Very distinct ones, too.
Lord, I don't understand, Holmes.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, to be the bearer of bad tidings, but I have my duties to perform.
Yes, and I'm sorry, too, Dr. Watson.
Huh?
I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to let you leave here.
Gracious,
you must consider yourself under arrest.
I never felt more despondent in my life.
Oh, cheer up, old chap.
Well, how can I? Locked up in a prison cell. Looks as if I might end up at the gallows.
Don't worry, Watson. You'll be out of here before the night is over. I promise you that.
I wish I felt as confident as you do. How do you propose to do it?
Oh, with the aid of a little hard thinking.
Thinking? That won't unlock any cell doors, thinking.
But it will, old fellow. It's obvious someone's deliberately trying to incriminate us. Let's try and reconstruct killing logically. Sid Trimble was a member of an espionage ring. I sent him a false message. After he'd left to keep the appointment, one of his colleagues trailed him to the music hall and killed him before he could betray anything to us. Yes, that's undoubtedly the way it happened.
The powder burns, Holmes. How do you account for them?
There were none just after the shot was fired. We know that. And yet Dr. Hendricks assures us that there are very distinct powder burns now.
May we come in, gentlemen?
Yes, of course you can, Dr. Hendricks. Hello, Lestrade.
Yes, I thought we'd come and chat with you, Doctor.
Well, that's very nice of you, gentlemen.
Yeah, not a bit of it, Doctor. You know, it hurts me to see you in here, and that's a fact.
And I can't bear to see a fellow medico in such plight without coming in to see what I can do to help, Watson.
Yeah, you're very quiet, Mr. Holmes.
Am I, Lestrade? I was thinking, you see... What, old chap? Have it.
You have what?
The answer. You'll sleep in Baker Street tonight after all.
Mr. Holmes, what are you talking about?
The murder of Sid Trimble. Incriminating powder burns were obviously faked. Watson and I know that, whether you and Dr. Hendricks believe it or not. The question is, how were they faked? I think I have the answer. Dr. Hendricks.
Yes, Mr. Holmes?
If a blank cartridge were fired at the wound after death, it would produce powder burns, wouldn't it?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, but who could have done that, Mr.
Holmes? Ah, that's the point, Lestrade. Who had the opportunity?
The constable who brought the body here.
True, old chap. Huh? Also, you, Dr. Hendricks.
That's perfectly true.
Yeah. Well, I had the opportunity too, Mr. Holmes. I spent half an hour in the morgue alone with the body when it first came in.
Well, you've narrowed it down to three suspects, Holmes. I hope I don't hang before you find the real killer.
I've found it, Watson.
Why, what? Who'd be, Mr. Holmes?
The answer is simple, Lestrade. The powder burns were certainly faked by a blank cartridge. Now, if a blank cartridge were fired into a wound, the wadding would have penetrated and distorted the wound.
Yes, but supposing the person had removed the wadding from the blank, Mr. Holmes?
Its effect would still be quite apparent to the police surgeon who removed the bullet. Am I correct, Dr. Hendricks?
Entirely. The surgeon could not fail to identify the marks, Mr. Holmes.
Exactly. Therefore, only one person could have fired that blank cartridge without detection. The same person who made the incision necessary to remove the cartridge would also remove all traces of the shot. You yourself, Dr. Hendricks.
Holmes, I believe you're right.
That's an ingenious theory, Holmes. Surely you're joking.
Am I? And how do you account for the pigeon feathers on the collar of your coat?
The devil with you, Holmes.
Here, come back here. Doctor. Constable. Tell that Dr. Hendricks.
It's Scott. Scotland Yard itself harboring an enemy agent. On my soul, Holmes, you've done it again. I must say you've got sharp eyes. I didn't see those pigeon feathers on Hendricks' collar.
Confidentially, my dear fellow, neither did I. But Hendricks' guilty conscience knew they might be there. It was a shot in the dark, and I had to take it. If you'd spent the night in a prison cell, I should never have heard the end of it, I'm sure. Never.
I want to see Mr. Mycroft Holmes, please.
Follow me, Mrs. Hudson. He's expecting you.
Aye, sir.
Ah, there you are, Mrs. Hudson.
Come and sit down.
Oh, thank you, sir. I got your message and came over right away.
In the first place, Mrs. Hudson, you may tell your sister that she needn't worry any more. I'm sure she'll find no more pigeon feathers in her room on the first floor back.
No, sir, thank you. But she knows the fact, because the birdman left her yesterday for good. Some strange men came and took him away. And today, she's let the room to a nice young commercial traveler. I'm really sorry to have bothered you with her troubles, sir.
I'm very glad you did, Mrs. Hudson. Thanks to your information, an enemy espionage ring has been broken, and the British government is deeply grateful to you.
You're always one for a joke, aren't you, Mr. Holmes? Well, I'm glad you're not angry with me. I'll be going now, sir. Just one more favor I'll ask before I go, though.
Anything, Mrs. Hudson. What is it?
Please don't tell your brother about this, sir. He'd be so angry with me for wasting your time.
Well, Doctor, that was really a swell story tonight. Although it was a bit unexpected for you to have been arrested.
Yes, indeed. Mr. Martell, when you're a detective like Holmes or a doctor like myself, well, you've got to be prepared to meet the unexpected every once in a while.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Greek Interpreter. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invite you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.